Hey, this is Doc Kemp, and I want to welcome you to a very special episode of Passion Talk. On this episode, I'm sharing an interview I did with serial entrepreneur and the director of Brooklyn United Marching Band, Mr. Tyrone Brown. Ty gave a very strong, powerful interview where he shared his story of starting out at a very young age and building up a very successful business, and then by the time he was 30, losing it all, and how he was able to rebound and build his thing and build his life and his business back up to where it's now brighter and better than it was before. I want you to listen very, very carefully and really understand what it means to put it all on the line and follow your passion. Also, I have a very special announcement for you. In the next few weeks, you can look for an all new and improved radio show at this day and at this time. That's right. Passion Talk is going away and is going to be replaced by the Work Your Passion radio program. This new program will bring you the stories of small business entrepreneurs from all walks of life who made the decision to follow their passion and build the businesses of their dreams. The goal is to inspire you, enlighten you, and embolden you to take action, to follow your passions and follow your dreams and build your businesses that you've always dreamed of. I'm really excited to get that program started, but until we do, for the next couple of weeks, you can enjoy a sneak peek of what we have in store for you. So until then, you can sit back, listen, learn, and enjoy, and I'll look forward to talking to you again very, very soon.
Okay, welcome to another episode of the Work Your Passion podcast, where we help you turn your passions into profits. I'm your host, Dr. Ken Duncan, business coach and owner of Work Your Passion Coaching, where we help you move your business forward faster. On this podcast, we have entrepreneurs and small business owners that have faced their fears, overcome challenges, and are currently building businesses based on their passions. On today's show, I'd like to welcome a friend and an inspiration to me, Mr. Ty Brown. Before describing himself as the CEO of Brooklyn United Marching Band, Big Deal Prints, and Big Deal Fundraising, Ty Brown will tell you that he is first and foremost a husband and a father. He's a serial entrepreneur that has been a band director since he's been 16 years old. Throughout his career, he has performed for celebrities, politicians, and at major events and arenas like the Barclays Center in his hometown of Brooklyn, New York. He is also the new director of bands and school entertainment at Monroe College. There are many words that you can use to describe Ty Brown, but the best ones are the ones he used to describe himself. Driven, dedicated, consistent, God-fearing, lives out loud, and loves to serve. Please welcome Mr. Ty Brown. Ty, how are you?
Oh, man, thank you so much. I'm doing well this morning, excited, and, you know, ready for the day. And thank you for the invitation. Thank you for the intro. Just excited to get things going.
Man, listen, man. Look, all right, so now, just to bring people that are listening to the podcast up to speed, Ben and I met probably about 2 years ago at a networking event, and we had an instant. We hit it off really, really good. We, you know, we had some conversations back and forth, and we began following each other on Facebook, and since that time, I don't think I have ever seen anyone exhibit as much passion just in their daily lives that you have. I mean, you're always posting about the things that you're doing, and we're going to get into the things that you're doing in a real short second here, but how do you do it, man? I mean, you have so much energy. It seems like you're always on Facebook. You're always doing all these different things. How do you do it? How do you get so much done in a day, man?
Let me tell you, I definitely feel like the kind of person I am is definitely, you know, God driven. You know, my life has pretty much been the same since I was a little guy. You know, I never really hung out I didn't really party, anything like that. But I've always been on this time schedule. My mom put me to bed very early. I was asleep by 9. And as I grew up, I wondered if I would change my own pattern now that I had permission to, you know. But I'm always in the bed pretty early, 10, 11 o'clock tops. I get my night's sleep, and I have this automatic alarm. And it's been like that forever. I swear, since I was a little guy, 4 a.m., I just pop up. If I went out to an event the night before and we got home at 11, 12 o'clock, no matter what, if I fall asleep by 12, 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock tops, I pop up. And I have this automatic alarm inside of me that just gets me up. And I've always recognized it, and I just figure, you know, there got to be a reason, you know. And I really just jump into action. I'm not sluggish. You know, I'm not a small, skinny, healthy, 100% guy, but I'm not sluggish, and I jump up. And for the day, I'm really just good. You know, I take a little power nap here and there, but I'm really just up and ready to go for the day. And I love getting stuff done. I don't see a reason for people to have excuses about why they can't get stuff done at the other. You know, I've done it with $0. I've done it with some dollars. I've done it with zero help. I've done it with some help. And to me, you know, if it's in you and it's burning in you, that's where life is at. You know, when something is just in you and you know you want to get it done and you kind of like just have this belief in yourself that I could do it. Or for me right now, I'm just doing it again and again. See, because, you know, in the beginning I had to convince myself, you can do this, Todd, you can do this. But lately it's like, can you do it again? Can you do it already? You know, can you do it again? And I'm just excited to be in competition with myself. I'm just excited to try to do it again and again, bigger, better each time that I try the same exact things. You know, I went through phases where I tried different things, and I realized in life, and I realized in my conversation with God, the closer I got to God, the easier it was for me to stop chasing opportunities, stop trying to create something new. And these days of the past, I would say 2 years of my life has been the absolute best because I stopped chasing. I'm simply doing what I've been doing, simply doing what I know works, and just keeping that coming. Since that has happened, more and more opportunities, larger opportunities in the same field have opened up for me. So, you know, just to answer your question, it's God. You know, it is God tapping me on my shoulder saying, it's time. Get up, get started, get going. And as far as posting on Facebook is concerned, you know, some might find it annoying or this guy's always on. But the truth is that the texts and the inboxes of people saying, you motivate me, or saying, you know, Ty, I read them every day. I don't know if my else told you, but I appreciate you living out loud. I appreciate you sharing your stories because it's truthful. We see you doing these things. These are tangible things that you say that's going to happen, and you months later it's a big event. Months later you're on the TV screen. So months later it actually happens. So to see you say it, to see you do the work, the processes to get it done, and then to see the actual product be finished, it's a motivation to people, and I'm hoping to continue to do that.
Man, listen, that right off the bat, that first question, that first answer to my first question, you embodied everything, every one of those adjectives I used to describe you in your bio. You're driven, dedicated, consistent, God-fearing, lives out loud, loves to serve. You just described everything right there. So
yep.
Let's take it back a little bit, okay, and let's go back to kind of like.
So I was born and raised in Crown Heights, Brooklyn. Mom owns a house on Lincoln Place near Utica Avenue, and I'm the oldest of three, two brothers and a sister we all live in the same house, and I'm the only one out of the family that had a separate dad. Everybody else, you know, mom had remarried and had children with my stepdad, which is my two brothers and my sister, so things were a little different for me. You know, I'm the brown of the house. Everybody else was a Harry. And growing up, stepdad wasn't in the right mindset to really do too much. You know, we had a little alcoholism in the house and things like that. And mom was just a workaholic. You know, mom took care of the business, took care of the bills, everything. So she was in and out the house every morning. So as the older guy in the house, you can imagine who picked up the little brothers and sisters, who helped iron their clothes, who helped them with their homework. That was all on me. Obviously, that at a young age took on some resentment, obviously. You know, that happens to every family. where I didn't have the children, why am I raising the children? You know, things like that. And for years, Mom and I just bump heads for years. I mean, I did what I was told, of course, but I was never happy about it. And never had problems in school, academically on point, you know, behaviorized like any other male kid, talked a lot, played a lot. But around age 13, around the eighth grade, you know, Mom said, let's try something new. And she sent me down south with my father, who lived in Atlanta, Georgia. So mm-hmm. I spent 3 or 6 months down there and got shipped right back to New York City, you know. But when I got back to New York, that moment changed my life. Moms were very much prepared for me to come back home, knowing that things didn't work out in Atlanta. And she had done some research into where me start identifying, making my own identities, you know, not just coming home, taking care of my brothers and sisters, but where can I start making my impact and start doing my own thing. She signed me up for a program. At the time, those that know anything about Brooklyn or anything about New York City, it was the Jackie Robinson Center that was the largest youth organization in the borough. Over 6,000 students, over 23 sites, and very much in the early, this is the early 90s, this is around 1991, flourishing in what they do. Their premier piece of their program was their marching band. I had no previous interests in music. I never expressed, you know, to Mom, I want to do anything like that. But my cousins were members, and Mom said, well, when he gets back, let's take him over there. And I can vaguely close my eyes and remember the walk to this school with Mom. You know, it's only two blocks away from where I lived, and I remember it really, really well, not knowing at the time, obviously, that this would become my home from home and become my home for life. But went into the program excited, you know. I'll learn this drum, I'll try. And they put me on drums, and I played drums for a little while. I was a bigger guy, so they needed me on a sousaphone, the tuba. So they threw me on the tuba for a little while. And I enjoyed myself. I put my all into it. I enjoyed my friends. I enjoyed who we met. And I really enjoyed the vision that the program had for the band. And I began to take part in the leadership council, student leadership council, and all that kind of stuff. The school leadership council is really where I had an opportunity to learn me. Wow, Ty, you have a disability that when you kind of say stuff, you know, other people your age is like, yeah, let's do it, you know. So that was fun, you know, student leadership, you know. You know how it is. It's like 9-10 girls in there, like 3-4 guys, you know. And mm-hmm. the 3-4 guys, we enjoyed leading. We enjoyed, you know, planning out stuff. And the girls, they enjoyed what they did, you know. So student leadership was really where we begin to realize that we had a real passion for what we were doing at the program, that the band was on the come up, performing for celebrities and things like that, and we felt like, wow, we can really make an impact. This is a good time to mention that my wife was also on the student council at the time. She was just another young lady in the student council. We started dating early ages, 13, 14, you know, things like that. We met in the band program, and the directors at the time, the adult directors, supervisors, again, recognized something special, started sending us to represent the program at different youth events, so whether it be in Washington, D.C., or in New York City or Philadelphia, we became like speakers. We started speaking at youth functions. I remember a trip to D.C., on nonviolence, and I was selected as a panel, and she was selected to go with me. And her and I traveled to D.C., and they say I smashed it, you know. They say that just I was talking about prevention. Everybody was talking about how to stop violence, all that kind of stuff. And I was talking about at our program, we don't have those issues. Prevention mm-hmm. is the key to decreasing violence. And if the more you put into programs, we have something to do. Nonetheless, I already had my statistics. I already had 9 out of 10 of this. You know, I was 15, man. I was 15, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed being outspoken at a national event and killing it. Upon my arrival back to New York, I was hired by the Jackie Robinson Center. This is 1994. I got my first major job.
15.
At 15. They again, they saw something in me, and I appreciate them to this day. The leaders of the center, which was only four or five main directors, they kept saying, that guy over there, whatever. So they brought me into the office, and they started teaching me everything about the program, about the grants, about the budgets, about everything. I mean, I was an absolute sponge to everything that they had going on there. They were talking about a $7-8 million program at the time, maybe even more. But I was an absolute sponge to how the program was designed, all the components, where the money came from, where the grants came from, how we get our students, why we get our students, how we get refunded by the Board of Ed, by the state, by the city, by federal. I started to learn all of those things, and I didn't know I was being groomed to take over. The director who was at the time was leaving. So I wasn't aware of that, but I was open to it. And eventually, I think I was 17 years old when I was on my own with this program, where Mr. Johnny Walker, who was my biggest mentor and the director at the time, he moved on to become a principal. So here I am, assistant band director for pretty much the largest youth organization, with a marching band upon by every politician at the time, every large ticker tape parade or sporting event. We did most of those. All the local, parades and things like that, and then some traveling at least once or twice a year. So I saw something larger than our performances. Mr. Walker took care of that part. He took care of we look great, we sound great. I saw an opportunity to show chemically what we can do. And I began to implement programs where everything had to do with the youth. I was tired of adults running our lives for us. And in this sense, you kind of just told us what we were going to do. And I said, how you plan a youth function without any youth at the table? So I was very outspoken to that. I was very outspoken to what? Y'all plan a retreat for us, and nobody invited us to come and share what we wanted. So I was very outspoken about peer. And at that time, all the buzzwords around peer started coming out. This is the time when they started doing tribunals, youth courts and all that kind of stuff. So I was very much aware of those buzzwords, and I started talking about how the program can change, how the program can grow if we focus a little bit more on peer input. Young people input. And we really, really rocked it, man. We rocked it. Academically, I lowered our budget by asking them to just give us a supervisor for a tutorial and allow us to take all of our students in our higher grades that have 80, 90 averages, pay them minimum wage to tutor all of the younger ones who were failing classes. It was a project that everybody didn't agree with, but the boss, who only matters, said, let's do it. Give them one adult supervisor, take the new budget, hire all his older kids that have 80 averages and higher, 85 and higher, and allow them to tutor in groups 1 to 3, 1 to 4, no more, all of the kids that are failing, and give them a year. Man, yeah, I had 100% passing rate for the whole band. Everybody passed all their classes. And that pilot program became a standard throughout the census, where they begin to look into peer possibilities, all that kind of stuff. We continue that for years. I do that same exact thing today. Today, we're talking about, what, 10, 20 years later, I do that same exact thing today, where I rather hire my older 12th graders, my 11th graders who are killing it in school. I'd rather give them a couple of dollars to work with the peers. And I'm telling you that it changes the game. It changes the game. The mentorship that goes on, the come on, I've been there, I've done that, let me build you up that goes on, changes the game. You don't need a room full of master degrees to make a difference. Young people have a passion within them. When you give them the power to help or to serve, trust me, they knock it out the park, and they work together very, very well. So I've always been a huge advocate of young people doing it on their own, young people and together, and my success, how many kids I've sent to college, how many kids I've had in HBCUs across this country is tremendous, and I'm excited about it. And it's pretty much me knowing that what I do works, you know, there's a certain confidence you have to have when you're doing this type of thing. If you know what you do works, then keep doing it. Don't listen to other people. Don't listen to the trends. Just bust it out. And I don't need to, like, fight with anybody no more because now I own all of my own stuff, you know, my own programs. I don't have to consult with anybody. I know it works. I've seen it work, and all I'm doing is make sure it's being done over and over again. So it kind of catches you up to early years.
That's exactly what I want to key on, because you have really built this out and, like, really taken over and kind of created your own reality with what you're doing. And I want to get to the Brooklyn United marching band in a second, but kind of going back to, so you started out, I mean, and you basically said, you know, music wasn't your passion, but once you was introduced to it, it became something that you emboldened. So what was that like? Like, how did you really, when you were given that responsibility at 15, 16 years old, was there fear? Was there ever any fear that you had about kind of, you know, making it and doing this full time?
Let me tell you, I don't remember anything about fear. What I do remember is the support that I got from the adults that put me in the position. And as I look back on that, I think that's a key for anybody that's working with young people. If you're listening to the show and you have any connection, the support kind of empowers the youth. You know, you can, somebody saying, I trust in you. I believe in you. I don't care if you believe in yourself. I don't care if you think you can do this. I believe you can do this. And if that's constantly being reinforced into a young person's ear, young people are naturally fearless. We know that. We know that about babies. Babies, you know, they'll touch anything. But young people are naturally fearless. So I don't remember being afraid, being scared. I didn't see the magnitude of the possibilities at the time. So I wasn't fearless. I felt very, very supported. I think for my life, that's what made it really, really easy, because the people who said, I chose him, I don't care what anybody else says, they took on the fight. You know, he doesn't have a degree. What are you doing? He's a charger kid, and he's a kid. How are you letting him even voice his opinion? They took on that fight for me. They shielded me from those things. They fought those fights behind closed doors. And even though I knew of them, I never felt them directly. When I got in front of a crowd, I knew that crowd of 30, 40 people, maybe 10 of them are like, I enjoy what's happening right now. This young man, 30, I'm like, what the hell are you doing in front of me? I've been doing this and that and the other. But the bosses that put me there, I always felt like, don't worry about it. Get up there, present your report, present your findings. Share with them what you've done. They're not going to like what they hear because some of them have been doing it for 20 years, but get up there, tell them what you did, tell them the results, and get it done. And my wife and I, who were like really just partners in everything, we sat down, we learned how to do PowerPoint, we learned how to do all these things. We said, what is it that we want to show them? And we said, this is where we started, this is where we wanted to be, here's how we did it, here's the results. And what teenager, high school years old, can't do that? Everybody can do that. So we did what people probably getting paid millions of dollars to do. We did it. We presented it to the school. We presented it to the programs, presented it to the schools. We presented our findings, our test market of our 100 band members, and we showed here's what works. Here's what the best practices are. And we did it without fear. And then we felt supported, so we had nothing to worry about.
So the key thing with you was the support. That was everything. So now you also have, you know, besides the marching band, you have two other businesses that you started, Big Deal Prints and Big Deal Fundraising. Can you tell me a little bit about those?
Man, let me tell you. Once you find a primary passion, you know, you're very passionate, you got that rolling and rocking. The reality about business that I learned later on, it's not an early thing, later on is multiple streams of income are very important. You know, are very important. Number one. Number two, especially if there's synergy between your businesses. Create, if you're going to create sub-businesses, side hustles, whatever you want to call it, to your main situation, make sure there's a synergy in them. Synergy to me in them means that number one, you can become your own, your main client. Let me explain how those things happen. When I was about 19 years old, Jackie Robinson Center had been using the same t-shirt guy forever. and the band, you know, was like any other activity. We put in a lot of shirts, and I used to have to go and pick up the shirts from the guy. This guy has been printing Jack Robinson stuff for 10 years maybe. And again, if you can imagine 6,000 kids, we had basketball, we had a chess team, we had a step team, we had the band, we had everything. He had to print so much stuff. So in meeting him and talking to him, sometime I arrived at his location. I had to wait a little while, so I'll stand there, and I was a sponge. I would talk, ask him questions. One day he says, "Guess what?" I said, "What's that?" He said, "I'm selling the business. I'm leaving. I'm going out. I'm leaving town." I said, "Really? So you're selling these machines?" He's like, "Yeah." I said, "How much?" So he gave me a number. I ran home to my mom. "Hey, mom. Can, you know, he's selling the business, and this would be a good opportunity. We can take the machines, put it in the basement, and we can take Jack Robinson could be our first client." And luckily for me, mom had just refinanced the house. She was like, "If you believe it can work, let's do it." And she gave me the $9,000. She gave me the $9,000 we needed. She believed in me, and she believed in what we could do. I went, me and my brothers, because my brothers are older now. We went to over there. We took all the equipment, packed it up, brought it to our basement, all Lincoln Place, put the equipment down in the basement. I taught my brothers how to do it and a few of the older band members, and our first client was Jackie Robinson. We took over that print business. So we started doing all of Jack Robinson's printing. Every summer camp shirt, we're talking about huge orders. So our first year out, which we're printing what? Maybe they probably spent $20,000, $30,000 a year in printing. Mm-hmm. So I started Big Deal. I started printing. It wasn't Big Deal Prints at first. It was Team Ram Plus. We started printing at like age 19. We were printing.
I'm going to stop here because I just want to make sure to put a very fine point on this because this is really amazing. I find it fascinating.
Got it.
you're a 19-year-old kid, okay?
We can
use that term, kid, okay?
Yep.
And up to this point, you really had no experience of being a business owner.
None.
Okay. You have to make some really solid experience in the business world with your with the Jackie Robinson, but really no real. Experience being your own business owner. You happen upon an opportunity to take over a thriving business, and you take it over. Not only do you take it over, but you take it over and you get your first client almost all at the same time.
All
that's accurate.
Before I made the purchase, I asked Jackie Robinson, "If I make the purchase,
okay,
will you support me?" And they said, "Why not?"
Okay. Now, again, I'm going to go back to my same question. Doing something completely new, something that you had no experience doing at a young age, was there fear? Did you have fear? And if there was, how did you overcome it?
Wow. I have a feeling we're going to ask that question at least four or five times in the conversation. And I'm going to have to go back to my memory bank and say I had no fear. I had no fear. I had watched this man print shirts forever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I understood the concept. I knew in my young age, you know, where the basketball tournaments was, where the schools were, the daycares, whatever. So I knew that there was a market. I knew that there was a huge – I watched his business. I watched his shop. I watched the screens on the wall. I knew who he was doing business with, and I knew that they would need somebody to print shirts. And I knew that it was competition, but I just knew that he already had a base. I knew I could go to mom. I knew she had the house. I knew she knew how to get, you know, big dollars when needed. I knew Jackie Robinson would say yes. And I knew if nobody else did anything, I knew that, hey, I had no problem walking into a school and presenting my package. You know, so I really had no fear as it relates to ability to pay mom back, A, and B, ability to continue to create jobs for my young, for my friends / my brothers, my family. Because I knew I wasn't going to be the one printing, even though I knew how. I let them get trained. So that was part of the motivation that I would create jobs for some of my people that are close to me. And that's what happened, you know. But again, I would have to say I don't remember a delayed reaction, a fear, a pause, a hesitation. It was kind of like, yep, this is what I'm going to do.
Wow, that is amazing. And, you know, from what I picked up, you took a risk, but it was kind of a manageable risk because you had already absorbed a lot of what you needed to know. And I think the biggest key to your success would be that not only did you absorb it, you implemented it quickly and flawlessly. Would that be accurate?
We were up and running within a week, and we had orders that week. I took some time off, went to Atlantic City to a trade show, mm-hmm. and I spent that week in learning the business, learning where to get our shirts from. We automatically thought everybody got their shirts from 23rd Street in the city. But we learned where to get the shirts from, how to open the accounts. This is my first time learning about doing BBAs and doing business ads. And we went downtown to the county clerk's office, started our DBA, got up and going. So now we can apply for wholesale accounts with Gildan and shirt companies. So we were receiving generic catalogs that we can now put our own sticker on to pass out, da 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 da. So we kind of jumped in really fast, invested a couple of dollars into learning the business a little bit, and we started distributing our stuff at every church, every school. I should back up to mention that I spent a lot of time, like all my free time, at this place on Atlantic Avenue that everybody probably, a lot of business owners know about, Atlantic between Franklin and Clausen. This is another young 13-year-old move that I made. I saw a flyer one day about a protest rally with Reverend Sharpton and some other ministers on the flyer, and I decided I wanted to go. And my mom let me go, and I met Reverend Dillon, Dennis Dillon, who is the publisher of the New York Christian Times and economic empowerment preacher. Mm-hmm. That became my home for every event. And Reverend Dillon today is if people that know him or know me, he calls me his son, and I call him my goddad. And on the business side of things, I was a sponge to him. I picked up a lot of things while traveling with him to speaking engagements and things of that nature. So I was a sponge to business through Reverend Dillon, who by the time I got 19, I already learned and knew certain things. So my business education really came from hands-on, came from listening, came from being around brilliant minds that was allowed to pick up from. And again, looking back, the closer and closer I get to God, the closer and closer we speak about my life, he reminds me, I put good people in your life on purpose. Don't take those things for granted. Everybody may not have the opportunities you have because they didn't have the people that I placed for you. So I just want to make sure that parents might be listening, understand the power of positive adults in the lives of their children early. As a father now today, with my son, I look for other people who I wouldn't mind him spending time with, mind him learning from, because I remember how positive and powerful that has been and that was in my life.
Wow, that's key, and that kind of goes a little countercultural to what most parents think, because I'm a father myself, and you instinctively want to shield your child from a lot of different things because, you hear so many bad things out there and these stories. But you're absolutely right. If your child is going to have, a better experience and learn things that you can't teach them, they have to learn them from other people that are out there doing them, and you have to be able to put them in those positions to be around those people. That's a very good thing to know.
For sure. So yeah. back to the business development stuff. What I began to do as I grew up is if the band needed it, I wanted to own it.
Okay.
But I didn't want to look at our budget and every year find out we're spending X amount of money in transportation or this amount of money in T-shirts or this amount of money in fundraising. So all of the businesses that I've developed had to do with me making the connection with ownership and things that we needed anyway. So I've always been involved in transportation. I've always had school bus connects, charter bus connects, limousine connects. I've always been involved in transportation. I've always had a piece of the puzzle as far as finances and money coming in at the transition. I'm not going to spend out thousands and thousands of dollars and not get something back. A. B, I'm not going to refer thousands and thousands of dollars and not get something back. If I'm in the game as a band director or whatever, and people and I'm doing well, and other people say, well, where do you go to get your shirts done? Oh, okay, so Todd, where do you go to get uniforms for your band? Where do you go to get buses when you guys travel? Where do you go? How you raise all that money to take those kids all those places? Da, 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 da. When I begin to get hit with all those answers, I said, we got to find out how to get paid over referrals. So I've always had my hands in all of those markets because I want the person that I'm dealing with to know that we're partners. I'm not going to just send you business. I'm not going to just throw it your way. Yeah, you made the investment in the bus, but I'm the one keeping the buses rolling because every week this past few weeks, I sent you 10 people. So what can we do? So I began to make my personal financial investments into businesses that I felt were going to continue to be of service. And as my organizations grew, it would grow also. So my various business, you know, ventures have always been around things that I had to spend money on anyway.
Okay.
So that's how Big Deal Fundraising came apart. We had Big Deal Transportation going on. So we had a little bit of everything going on.
Yeah, a little bit of everything. Right. So now, okay, so let's fast forward a little bit and bring us up to Brooklyn United Marching Band, which is your big thing that you're doing right now. And that's kind of when I met you. That was, I believe, just taken off, or it may have been going on, but it really became big in the last couple of years. Tell me about that.
Well, what's important to know, and this is a part of the story that I think a lot of us go through, and it's important to know, that when Jackie Robinson Center closed down in 2004, I continued with my band program from 2004. I renamed it, I restarted it, got our own 501c3, and I was on my own now as the Brooklyn Steppers Marching Band. From 2004, 2005, 6, 7, 8, 5 years straight, we ran our programs, no problems. It's important to know, before we get into Brooklyn United, it's important to know that in 2008, I lost it all. Everything.
Wow.
Everything that I had, everything we built, we lost it all. It was my midlife crisis. I just turned 30 and I just lost everything that I built. Reputation was tarnished and ruined. The program, I had to shut it down. Life was in turmoil. I almost lost my family, wife and son, because, you know, and I can speak on it today because it's just, I'm just so above it, you know, but 5 years back in 2008, there was a big controversy about me and another situation. And it was all over the news, it was all over the papers, it was everywhere. I lost it all. You know, I walked away from it all. It wasn't taken from me, that's important to know. It wasn't nothing criminal, and it wasn't nothing but I wasn't built up to handle the pressure that was going on at the time. And I walked away. I said, listen, it happened, and I'm done, and I'm walking away from all of this stuff. I'll figure it out. This is the darkest moments of my life. And when I say lost it all, I'm talking about zero income, friends and family. I'm not me being uncertain where they stood, politicians and celebrities that I would normally just text or call. If there was 20 of them, I spoke to probably two or three during this time. And I didn't know what was next. So here you are, that when I was interviewed by the Daily News one time on a profile article, they asked me, what am I doing? And I said, this is my purpose in life. This is why I'm on the earth. And here I am at 30, 31, going through this tragedy, no longer having that purpose in play. So what's next? I had no answer to what's next. For years, I did what I did well. I did what I did daily, 7 days, 8 days a week, because I said this is my purpose on earth. And here I am, not for the first time in my life, uncertain about my purpose, my life, my direction, my family, my connections, my this, my that. And that I went through that from 2008 all the way up until 2 or 3 years ago. But we're in 2014 now, so maybe from 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011, 2012, not until around 2013 did I start to step out and step back into my purpose. So if anybody sees me today, we talk about it all the time, people see the glory, don't know the story. Mm-hmm. This is definitely one of those examples of don't talk about where I'm at today because you don't know where I was yesterday. Or don't tell me, well, he always had a couple of dollars. He always had – I did it from zero. I started this Brooklyn United program from zero because I didn't have – I lost it. I didn't have it. I didn't have the same connects. I was uncertain about where I stood with certain people. You know, I haven't been off for so many years. But the answer to what happened next is God. God definitely just pulled me out and said, okay, I punished you enough. Mm-hmm. The decisions you made, you were able to salvage and rebuild your connection with your family, your wife and your son. You've been committed and faithful to me in the sense that your day-to-day while unemployed, while this, was building a relationship with God. And now I see it's time for you to go. Give it a try. And that was it. The time that I was off, after my 2 years or 3 years of darkness, the first things that I began to do was reconnect in church, was to really, really start volunteering and committing myself back to the work. And when I say the work, I'm talking about the work on me. And I think it's important for us, any listeners, to understand that when I do a workshop on exercises, I do this workshop all the time. I love it because people yell out that their exercises consist of push-ups and sit-ups and pull-ups. And I reversed that, and I said, great, so you're building up your body. What are you doing for your mind? What are you doing for your soul? And in absence of exercise for your body, your limbs get weak, you gain weight, you become unhealthy. What happens when there's no exercising to your mind or to your soul? Your mind and your soul get weak and unhealthy. So when people say, so Todd, so what happened? How did you lose it? I say, I wasn't exercising. I was just living. I was running that band program, killing it. We was traveling. Kids was doing great. But I wasn't exercising for me. I was taking care of y'all and not doing any type of exercises for me, which left me vulnerable to possibilities, to outside influences, to other situations. I wasn't exercising me from 17 up. When I was being a sponge around people for business techniques and youth development techniques, I wasn't paying attention to what that person was doing for their own techniques and their own development. I didn't pick that up at a young age. So I didn't have it all. I had some. So now here I am alone in my own darkness, and the only person who can share with me these revelations about yourself was your soul has not been fed and your mind has not been tested. You need to go back and revisit those three areas of exercise. And that's what I did. I built myself up. I built myself up on my own with support from my family, support from my church family. And I said, you can be back where you were, but you got to do the work first. I did the work. I did the work, man. I read my books. I studied. I got my cue cards out, and I built me up before I put myself back out to the world on what I think I can do with my life and where I want to go. So that's my story.
Wow. Wow, and I had no idea about any of that before we did this interview. So that is makes you even more fascinating to me as an inspiration because
that makes it a part two.
So many people get hit with that thing that put that sits them down and they never get back up.
Brooklyn United is less than 2 years old now.
Mm-hmm.
Less than 2 years old, you know, what I did.
And you're doing some big things with them. You're doing some really big things with Brooklyn United. Tell us about the league that you're doing with them.
Yeah, we are back at the top, man. So, you know, I took a couple of dollars, went and bought some instruments. I made a phone call to an old friend at the Brooklyn Nets. This is when I first started. And I asked her, does she need our services again? Because I used to work with the Nets when they were back in New Jersey. And her saying, I've been looking for a drum line all these years that you've been gone. She knows the whole story. You know, I've been looking for a drum line all the years you've been gone. If you are ready to come back, we believe in what you gave us before. We believe what you do. We're not happy with anybody we've dealt with since you left. We will give you a chance. And they gave me the money to buy the first equipment. They gave me the money to get Brooklyn United up and going. They gave me the money, said, we need a drum line. Go get us one. And I called my old guys back. I said, hey, y'all want to do this again? They was like, we've been waiting for you to say something. As a family, we just jumped back into it. We jumped back in. We got things going. We built up Brooklyn United. We started recruiting again. Every money dollars that I made working with different people, I went and bought more equipment, more instruments, got some uniforms for the kids, started booking performances again. And today, I'm happy to say that our calls come in regularly. We get called for all the big gigs, you know. One of the people on our staff is a former member who's been my business partner for all those years and everything we've ever done. She does all the graphic design and everything like that, and she does all the marketing. And we get calls because people saw us on YouTube and on social media. It's such a new thing to us in this band world because I wasn't doing it when it first started popping off. And she handles all that stuff, and we get calls from everywhere. You know, we do bar mitzvahs, we do parades, we do sporting events. And, of course, right now we're getting ready for the NBA All-Star Games, which will probably be one of our largest exposure moments in my history. Millions and millions of people will watch the All-Star Games and will perform as a featured group this year. Though I've done All-Star Games before, I did the one in Las Vegas. I took a couple of kids from Brooklyn to Las Vegas for that. That was just a simple one-time performance. This year's event, we are featured throughout the event, and we're pretty excited. So Brooklyn United is up, running, doing well, saving lives again, affecting our youth, and really just getting back into the work that I created years ago and getting it going again. So we're excited. I'm blessed. And I'm feeling really good about it.
Man, that story, that's an amazing story, an amazing ride. Let me ask you, someone who is perhaps, let's say, unemployed right now, or maybe they're underemployed, or they're employed but they're unhappy with what they're doing, and they have a passion to do something, but they're not quite sure how to get it started. You have started something when you were very, very young. You built it up, you lost it all, and you restarted and you built it, and you're pretty much back at the top. What advice can you give someone who's in that situation that just wants to get started, but then they may not know how? What could you say to them?
Well, there's two main points to the not knowing how piece and the getting started piece. Piece number one is I don't believe that any of us can really survive if we don't have a strong relationship with God. That whatever struggles we're going through, you're going to continue going through until you stop and reconnect. I haven't met many people, successful people, who tell me a story and don't mention their connection with God in that story. I believe that the two things go hand in hand. Then the next piece is you have to find a mentor. You have to. So you're talking about not knowing how, but want, and all that kind of stuff. The answer to that is you have to find a mentor. You have to find a group, a networking group, or individual who's willing to share with you the what's next. Because I do, one of the things that I get hit with the most in my inbox is, okay, I'm awake like you're awake, but I don't know what to do today. You seem like you have these 10, 20 things to do on your list, Ty. I don't know what to do today. I'm awake. I'm willing. I'm ready, but I don't know what to do. Okay, I get that point. I get that point because that means you have the willingness and passion inside of you, but just not the know-how. You're going to have to connect with somebody. You have to, whether you get the mentorship for free or whether you find a coach, you have to pay them a couple of dollars, the not knowing piece is gonna you're gonna be coached through that for a couple of weeks to months, and before you're on your own and you have a pattern and system to know that in your business, you need to have at least 5 to 10 things to do a day for marketing, 5 to 10 things to do a day for old client connections, and 5 to 10 for new client connections, 5 to 10 things to do today on product development and understanding your business a little more, your business model, 5 to 10 things to do today to you know, like I said, educate yourself for doing that. So all the different aspects of your business growth, you're going to have to be able to come up with 5 to 10 things to do per day and be consistent with those things every day, even the days you don't see results. Keep planting those seeds over and over again, watering them over and over again, and reconnecting with your mentor or your business group so you can stay motivated and stay on track. Consistency is going to be the key after that point. So I would say, again, number one, check yourself as to where you are spiritually. Number two, find a mentor or mentor group. You can learn more, educate yourself about your business and business model. And number three, no matter whether I should see results or not, stay consistent in that plan A. Those would be the three things that I would share with them right away. Bye.
Excellent, excellent, man. Thank you very much for that. Those are some really wise words, and those are experience words coming from someone who's lived those words and continues to live those words every single day. So what's next for you, man? What do you got going on? If people want to connect with you, they want to support you, and your kids and your program, what do you got going on right now?
Man, this would be the first time I share this publicly, but what's going on with me now and where God has placed me is that I am taking on the task of director of bands at Monroe College. Here in New York City, with a campus in the Bronx and a campus in New Rochelle. And when I sat in that office being offered the position, my first response was, God has been preparing me every day for this moment today. And I sat there and really, really believed that I wasn't being interviewed. I was being welcomed in. And as the director of bands, I have access to scholarship money and financial aid money to get young people into college for free, where they pay no money. And they get to continue their passion in band and perform for the school and things like that while pursuing their degree in any of the disciplines that the school offers. In my years, I've sent many kids to college who've gotten degrees and come home and had problems getting jobs. So for the first time publicly, I'll share my new vision and my new passion. I've never thought about going back to school, personally. I've never felt a need to. I've never been a sit-down in a classroom-type person. And I've never felt the desire to go to school, even though I push education. But for me, entrepreneurship was delivered to me and put in my lap. I am now going to get my degrees. The school will be assisting me in accelerating my degrees for me to have the proper documentation to then develop a minor at that school, marching band development, to go along with their educational program, where young people who I meet from young, I will then groom them and prepare them for college to get them a degree in education with a minor in marching band studies, to then send them to schools where they will automatically receive jobs, I believe, because they have a specialty, and earn excellent salary while giving what they were given with me. Then my new words that I'm using is, this is my time to impact a generation. We will then use marching band as a discipline to teach young people character development and growth, to make a change inside of every school that we're at. And all of the people that I teach and then deploy to these schools with these degrees, for them to have employment with purpose, for them to have degrees with purpose, to go back into the schools, teach at the level that they were taught, with the love and the passion that they were taught for a discipline that we all fell in love with, and then have that rotate and keep going. 10 to 20 years from now, I can see a change in New York with marching band programs across the city, competitions across the city, bring people involved across the city with college as a automatic, with bachelor's and better being the plus. And I see that opportunity for myself at Monroe College. And that's the new task.
Wow. I mean, you can't get any better than that, man. I mean, you've taken this one little passion, not to say little, but you've taken this one passion and you've taken it to the extreme degree. I mean, when people say taking things to the next level, you've taken it to two levels and three levels beyond that, man. Congratulations on your new position. And congratulations on everything that you've done and will continue to do. I really, when I say that I look to you as an inspiration, that's not something that I say lightly. I really do look to you as an inspiration. And I think a lot of other people, upon hearing this and discovering who you are and what your story is, will also look to you as an inspiration. How can people get in contact with you if they want to, you know, get their kids into marching band, if they want to join your program? What's the best way to get in contact with you?
Well, thank you again, man. It's a journey that I look back and enjoy the growth moments, the opportunities where I had no choice but to stop and listen, stop and think. But anybody interested in our membership for our band program, you can reach us at Brooklyn United Marching Band on Facebook. You can type in Brooklyn United Marching Band. It will definitely come up. You can Google also. We are in Crown Heights, Brooklyn. We are opening up a new site in Bushwick and another site downtown Brooklyn, Fort Greene. So we're spreading out a little bit. People can have more access to us. Email address is bkunitedmb@gmail.com. And our phone numbers are 347-264-4069. 347-264-4069. And that's for memberships for our program. That's for your child plays an instrument and they're about to graduate from high school and you want to know about the scholarships at Monroe. And that's for just staying in connect with us and just staying in contact with us. We appreciate the love of from the village. We call it the BU Village, and we invite all of you that's listening to join us, keep up with our journey, and pray for our success.
All right, man. Well said, man. I'll make sure to put all that information, all your contact information and links to the podcast notes. So, man, this interview has given me much more than I could have ever anticipated. I want to thank you for your time this morning. And I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much, man, and continued success to you also.
All right, man. Okay, thank you. So thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Work Your Passion podcast. I would just like to add that no matter what your passion is, there's always a way to turn that passion into a profit-making ability. For more information about turning your passions into profits, log on to my website, www.workyourpassion.net. And make sure to sign up for a free strategy session where I can help you turn your passions into profit. Until the next time, thank you very much.